Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on real milk when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something terribly wrong or is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and now they've been banned as a result of all of that from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions. We've made them now a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 practiced and then advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty. Now, you don't have to know what the penalty is in order to suffer its effects. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or common law or natural law or karma or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. And best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about real milk. Real milk is raw milk. The artificial stuff, the industrial solvent that we call milk, is called pasteurized or homogenized milk. Last time I was giving you some of the negative scientific facts and research that's been going on with this thing of pasteurized milk. So I pointed out last time, I'll pick it up right here, where Briggs and his associates undertook a statistical study looking at pasteurized homogenized milk in 10 medical centers in the United States and 5 medical centers in Great Britain. And they compared the incidence of heart attacks in ulcer patients. They put them on a SIPI, that is a pasteurized, homogenized milk and cream diet, and then they compared that with those not using any milk at all, and their results were startling and unequivocal. In the United States, patients taking the SIPI diet had a threefold higher incidence of heart attacks. In England, the heavy pasteurized, homogenized milk drinkers had a sixfold increase in heart attacks as compared to the non-milk users. In their discussion, Briggs commented that even if the increased intake of milk is responsible for the higher incidence of myocardial infarction in ulcer patients, the identity of the specific constituent of milk that is important in that respect has not yet been established. Now, that was back in 1960, and we now know from the work of Pottinger, Woolsey, McCulley, Oster, and others that the specific constituents are heated protein and xanthine oxidase. Natural milk, raw milk, contains no heat, no heated protein, and no biologically available xanthine oxidase. Now let's take a look at sudden infant death syndrome, called SIDS, also known as crib death, has baffled scientists for years. And apparently, healthy baby dies in its sleep, without crying, without struggling. These infants are 6 months of age or younger, and with the highest incidence at about 3 months. Almost every conceivable cause, from vitamin C deficiency to suffocation from bedding, has been hypothesized as the cause of this tragic form of death in apparently healthy infants. Barrett, in 1954, suggested that inhalation of food while sleeping may be the cause. This could never be demonstrated at autopsy, but Barrett and his co-workers at the University of Cambridge then went a little deeper into the inhaled food theory. It had already been proven that most infants fed on cow milk have evidence in their blood that they are potentially allergic to cow milk protein. Infants often regurgitate various amounts of milk while they are asleep. If a child has built up a strong sensitivity to cow's milk, they reasoned, then why couldn't he experience a massive allergic reaction, anaphylactic shock, to a small amount of milk inhaled into the lungs? So using guinea pigs, they set out to test this theory. Guinea pigs were sensitized to milk, then the animals were subjected to cow's milk, dripping into the throat and down the windpipe. The effect, although dramatic and devastating, was not quite the quiet slipping away of the child who dies in the night from SID without a whimper. The animals convulsed violently and then died. Hardly what you would call a slipping away. So back to the drawing board again. Why was the reaction different? The blood antibodies were present in animals. The reaction should have been the same as in humans, but something was missing. Ah, wait. One bright researcher said the babies die in their sleep. No one has ever seen a baby die of the sudden infant death syndrome. They don't die in their mother's arms. They always die when no one is around while they're sleeping. So, okay, let's anesthetize the animals, they reasoned. This will simulate the sleep conditions of infants who die of crib death. Then the results were startling. And they were unequivocal again. Very soon after introducing the milk into the larynx of an anesthetized guinea pig, the animal stopped breathing without any sign of struggle. Death was preceded by a short period of more rapid breathing until, with a final nose twitching, the animal died. Their conclusion: it has thus been demonstrated that sensitized animals, when unconscious, can be killed quickly, silently, and without trace of struggle by the inhalation of whole milk. In classic British understatement, they added, the fact that babies do become sensitized to cow milk protein and that inhalation of this material could conceivably be the cause of crib death in a young infant should be another inducement to breastfeed young babies where practicable, as breastfed babies rarely die of sudden infant death syndrome. And we would suggest that babies should be breastfed whether practicable or not. Here are some suggestions. Insist that your baby be put immediately to breast, the mother's breast, after birth. Get the advice of an experienced midwife or mother concerning breastfeeding or contact La Leche League. The average doctor knows little or nothing about breastfeeding and may give you bad advice if he gives you any advice at all. And beware of baby formula propaganda. Don't be fooled by the numbers game that they play in comparing the constituents in mother's milk with formula. Then gain adequate weight for breastfeeding. During pregnancy, a breastfeeding mother can lose significant amounts of calcium and other nutrients if she doesn't lay up plenty of fat prior to delivery. We'll tell you more about breast milk in Chapter 11. Now, although pasteurized milk is promoted by its manufacturers as being essential for good health, a number of investigations would indicate the otherwise. The studies of Steinman in California are particularly relevant. Steinman studied rats. The decay process in rats' teeth is biologically identical to that in human teeth. He divided his rats into several groups. The control group received a standard nutritious rat chow made by the Purina company. These rats, Steinman discovered, would average less than one cavity for their entire lifetime. The second group received a very heavy refined sugar diet, and although they grew faster than the Purina rats, they averaged 5.6 cavities per rat. Now here's the shocker. The third group was fed homogenized grade A pasteurized milk, and they had almost twice as many cavities as the sugar-fed group, 9.4 cavities per animal. If processed milk does this to your teeth, what does it do to other high-calcium organs, say your bones, for instance? How does it affect calcium metabolism in the soft tissue of the body, such as in your blood vessels? Now, if you think that's bad, add chocolate to Junior's pasteurized, homogenized, grade A milk, and the cavity rate quadruples over that of the sugar diet. So here's the study. We find that if you feed rats Purina chow, they get one cavity in a lifetime. If you feed them sugar, they get 5.6. If you feed them homogenized and pasteurized milk, they'll get twice as many cavities as the sugar diet. Now, add chocolate to the pasteurized, homogenized milk, and you can get four times as many cavities. Now here again, you know, I'm not here to tell you how to feed your kid. I'm just here to give you the information. I always figured the people that are smart enough to vote ought to be smart enough to figure out what's good for them. And the thing that I'm complaining about is that I don't have anybody out there rooting for my side, which is the raw milk side. So I thought I'd just do it myself. I thought I'd bring you the other side of the story. You know, all coins have two sides. Stories have two sides. And the milk industry has presented their pasteurized side. I would venture a guess you probably never heard the raw milk story before. Now remember, this is the book called The Milk of Human Kindness. Is not pasteurized by William Campbell Douglas. You can probably get a copy of this book from Acres USA, Acres, A-C-R-E-S, USA.com. We'll get you to their website. And then if you want to call them, you can call them at 512-892-4400. No sixes involved. Again, that's 512-892-4400. And then there's another neat outfit over here called realmilk.com. They'll tell you where you can get real milk or raw milk in your local area. So remember that your teeth are the window to your body's physical condition. They reflect your general state of health. If your teeth are deteriorating, then your body is deteriorating. Hardening of your arteries and decaying teeth are part of the same degenerative process. The one you can see, cavities, comes early in life. The other, atherosclerosis, heart attack, is not seen and comes later. They're a continuum, part of the same degenerative process leading to disease and death. Dr. Weston Price, in his masterpiece, Nutrition and Human Degeneration, proved 50 years ago what Steinman showed in 1963, and that is processed food leads to disease and premature death. Again, let me repeat that. Processed food, those are your Oreo cookies, and pasteurized, homogenized milk. Processed food leads to disease and premature death. Milk contains a lot of sugar, but milk sugar, called lactose, doesn't have the same poisonous side effects as pure CNH cane sugar, sucrose, and it's more slowly absorbed into the bloodstream, and so it doesn't jolt the pancreas into oversecretion of insulin, which leads to hypoglycemia and eventually diabetes. But after pasteurization, you have a different story. Heating the milk turns the lactose into beta-lactose, which is far more soluble and therefore more readily absorbed into the bloodstream. This sudden rise in blood sugar is followed by a fall leading to low blood sugar, hypoglycemia, which induces hunger. If more milk is drunk to satisfy the hunger, then the cycle is repeated. Hyperglycemia, hypoglycemia, hunger, more milk. The end result is obesity. Obesity has become one of the most common diseases of childhood. Pasteurized milk makes you fat. Raw milk does not. The switch to pasteurized, heat-treated milk gave a great impetus to the milk industry at the turn of the century. People were confident that milk was nutritious and safe. But with the increase in consumption of pasteurized milk came a dramatic and steady increase in arthritis, heart disease, crib death, and stroke. Now people, again, have become suspicious of processed, pasteurized milk, and well, they should. Now the milk industry is indeed committing suicide. The use of fluid milk is on the decline both in total quantity and per capita usage. The abandonment of raw milk is a national tragedy. Fresh, unadulterated milk is largely unavailable except in two states, Georgia and California. The producers, having ruined milk through processing, leave the people with two choices. Drink milk that many experts say will ruin your health, or two, abstain from drinking milk totally. The end result is clear. The eventual disappearance of a nutritious food resource, natural milk, and a great physician predicted 20 years ago that unless the dairy industry is to awaken, it will give sway to the chemist and engineer, and forget that, so far only God has made life, and like dogs and horses, the dairy cow will become the pet of the curious to be preserved in zoos like the Texas Longhorn. Now, here's some propaganda that you may have or may not have known about. Now, just picture a bottle of milk, a milk bottle with a skull and crossbones on the bottle and the title, Raw Milk Can Kill You. That's pretty heavy stuff for Coronet Magazine, but that's what they hit the American public with in their May 1945 issue. They showed a milk bottle with a skull and crossbones on it with the words that says, Raw Milk Can Kill You. Crossroads, USA is in one of the states in the Midwest area called the Breadbasket and Milk Bowl of America. Crossroads lies about 25 miles from the big city on a good paved highway. What happened to Crossroads might happen to your town. Might happen almost anywhere in America. Coronet's expert, Dr. Harold Harris, then went on to describe in very livid detail the epidemic of undulant fever in Crossroads that infected 25% of the people who lived there and killed one in four. 25%. Case histories were then given to show how subtle and how debilitating this undulant fever disease could be. Investigation revealed that 25% of the population of Crossroads did not get undulant fever, and one out of four infected did not die because the town of Crossroads does not even exist. It's a fiction. The entire article that appeared in that May 1945 Coronet magazine, the entire article, because of the harm that it did to the raw milk industry and indirectly to the health of the American people, was more irresponsible than yelling fire in a crowded theater. And a curious incident in New York City, Harris tells his wide-eyed readers, concerned a physician who fell ill of brucellosis. Wham! Within a few days, he was dead. The source of this lethal infection of undulant fever or brucellosis was cheese. Cheese that was just dripping with germs, Harris reported. Now, the incident was indeed curious in that, first of all, undulant fever does not cause death in a few days. Number two, cheese does not transmit undulant fever. And three, investigation through the New York City Health Department revealed that there was never any such case ever reported in New York City. Dr. Harris puts forth so many outlandish claims and preposterous misstatements that you have to wonder if he even bothered to do any research. And if he did any research, if he didn't just decide to ignore the facts and write a sensational article that would sell to a major magazine and then scare the pants off of people who were drinking raw milk. Harris either made up this article out of his head, was totally incompetent in researching the literature, or Harris had a sincere desire to protect the American people from a disease about which he was totally ignorant. Irresponsible, incompetent, malicious. Does that sound too strong? Well, Dr. Harris admits to J. Howard Brown of Johns Hopkins University that he made the whole thing up, and from his own writings reveals that he knew that it could not have possibly happened. So a summary of Dr. Harris's facts that had been published in Cornet magazine. First, undulant fever is a common disease in the United States. That is totally false. Two, raw milk transmits undulant fever. That's totally false. Cows that have passed tests for undulant fever can pass the germ in their milk. That's totally false. Cows can transmit a pig strain of undulant fever in their milk. That's totally false. Undulant fever can be transmitted from cheese. That's totally false. And 4,000 cases of typhoid fever in Montreal were caused by drinking raw milk. That's totally false. But the event did occur in Montreal by drinking milk, but the milk was pasteurized milk. Number 7, drinking unpasteurized milk unnecessarily exposes one to illness. That's totally false. 10% of Americans are infected with undulant fever. It's totally false and it's totally preposterous. And number 9, raw milk can be as lethal as strychnine. That's totally false and it's asinine. Now, Americans believe in the Reader's Digest, and the American public believes in Ladies' Home Journal, and for the most part, in my opinion, this trust is justified. J.B. Darlington, in her brilliant series of articles in the Rural New Yorker, remarks that a free press, such as we have, would appear to guarantee that both sides of an issue or an argument will be heard on that issue. If such as in the case of raw milk versus pasteurized milk and articles appear in prestigious journals like the Reader's Digest and Ladies' Home Journal attacking raw milk as unsafe and no reply is heard in future issues, then unpasteurized milk stands convicted. After all, we do have a free press, do we not? But you know, folks, a free press is free to print or not to print. And so it will print what is in the best interest of the press. And the best interest of the press just happens to coincide with the best interest of its advertisers. Now, in the dairy industry, close to 100% of the advertising that's done concerning milk and dairy products is done by the National Dairy Council and those that are closely affiliated with the National Dairy Council. They do not consider raw milk to be in their best financial interest, and hence the American people have been subjected to a one-sided propaganda blast that depicts fresh, unpasteurized milk as a veritable bacterial soup and a sure path to an early grave. Pasteurization has been sold as a cure-all, and the people, after years of propaganda, have accepted it as being as true as the law of gravity. Now, the press is not free for everyone, and Cornet magazine totally refused to allow the other side, that is, the raw milk side of the milk controversy, to be heard. The Ladies' Home Journal, December 1944, reported a Kansas City survey proved that 9% of 7,122 school children entertained undulant fever infection. Entertained. Now, that's a peculiar word in their context. That could be interpreted by most people as meaning that almost 700 children of those surveyed were running around with undulant fever. Boys and girls, that would be an epidemic. Darlington and the Rural New Yorker investigated this claim. Both Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas health departments denied any knowledge of the survey. And after further research, Darlington finally found the report that the Kansas cities had no knowledge of. The report did indeed reveal 9%. But 9% of what? Now, the study merely showed that 9% of the children had a positive skin test to brucellosis, like a TB skin test, but not a single case of undulant fever was found in any of those children. And not only were the children not entertaining the infection, as reported by the Ladies' Home Journal, but because of their positive skin tests, which indicate immunity, it would be almost impossible for them to contract the disease. Now, the pasteurization propagandists will use the flimsiest statistics in their relentless drive to stamp out raw milk. So I got to pause here for a moment. Let me put my arrow right here in the margin. Tell you a little story. There's a book out here called The Mad Cowboy, written by a fellow by the name of Howard F. Lyman. Howard Lyman was interviewed by Oprah Winfrey. Now, Lyman is a cattleman from Montana, and he operated at that time a feedlot. And he fed chemicals to his cows on the feedlot, and he sold his chemical commercial beef to the packing houses, and the packing houses made hamburger out of it. Well, Lyman developed cancer. And he was kind of curious as to why he, a healthy outdoor-type Montana cattleman, would develop cancer. And as he got to researching into the subject matter, he found that he was getting cancer from his own beef that he was producing with all the chemicals that he was feeding to him out there in the bunkers. So he went on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And he told quite a story. And he tells quite a story here in his book called Mad Cowboy. Well, Oprah Winfrey made this comment on the air. She said, well, I'll never eat hamburger again. Once she heard the hamburger story and the E. coli story and the 0157-07 story and so on. And so the American Cattlemen's Association sued her under a Texas statute that says you can't malign or defame food products. Yeah, that's right. See, the Cattlemen's Association goes into the legislature of Texas and says, now listen, anybody who says that hamburger or meat is bad for you needs to be prosecuted and put in jail. Now, that shows you that the American Cattlemen's Association doesn't believe in free speech. They believe in their speech, but they don't believe in any contrary speech, as was evidenced by the fact that they prosecuted and sued Oprah Winfrey. Now, it just so happens that Ms. Winfrey has some money, and so she moved her whole production operation down to Amarillo, Texas, and successfully defeated the cattlemen with the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. And one of the chief witnesses was this guy, Howard F. Lyman. Now, I come on the air and I say, well, let me tell you the story. I'm a little bit different cat. First of all, I'm a law school teacher. So when somebody says, well, we're going to sue you, that's like telling a duck you're going to throw him in the water. Bring him on, as old George would say. Secondly, I'm such a little fish in the pond that not very many people are going to hear me ranting and raving about raw milk and pasteurized milk or bad hamburger or E. coli anyway. And I don't think the Cattlemen's Association would waste their time or their money or their effort on me, although it would give me a soapbox for which I could then get up and preach to the choir. But this is one of the tactics that is used in the American press, and with real logic to it. Think about it. Let's suppose that you're CBS. And every once in a while, the American Dairy Council comes in and spends $10, $20, $30, $40 million advertising milk with a mustache, etc., on CBS television and CBS radio and so on. Would you, as the advertising manager at CBS, or as the chief executive officer, or anybody that's got any authority or any moxie at all, want to offend an advertiser that spends $10, $20, $30, $40 million every now and again with you advertising their product? The answer to that is no, you wouldn't. And if you did, you'd be fired in short order. So CBS is not going to run any articles or do anything on 60 Minutes that's going to affect their advertising revenue from the American Dairy Council. It ain't going to happen, kids. Now, Oprah Winfrey, I don't know where her head was when she did this. Evidently, she must have some kind of an inroad in the television industry over there in which she can actually speak her mind. Now, I don't know of very many people that can do that. I can do that, and there are a few other people here on talk radio. Rush Limbaugh can do that, and a few other guys, you know. And we get paid for doing that because when we do that, it brings advertisers in. See, there's the other side of the coin. And so we're kind of a minor influence. But Oprah Winfrey, she's not a minor influence. She talks to millions of people a day. And when that woman says, I'm not going to eat hamburger anymore, oh, my God, you know, that's just unheard of. You can't do that. Not in America. So the bottom line to the story here is that there's tremendous clout in the food industry. Whether it's the dairy portion of the food industry or the meat packing of the food industry or the packaging of Oreo cookies or something else. You know, there's big bucks involved here. And you need to forget about the legislature of Texas protecting the health, safety, and welfare of the people of Texas or anybody else. Those people are on the take. Those people take their money, their campaign contributions, which God in the scripture tells you is nothing more than a gift, and a gift is a bribe. And he tells you not to do that. All you legislators, you ought not to be taking 5 cents from anybody running from public office or running for public office because it's a bribe. Now, for anybody to believe for a minute that when he takes $10,000 or $50,000 from the American Dairy Council that he's not beholden to that group when it comes time to vote in the legislative process for something that's going to be of benefit or something that's going to harm the dairy industries is living out in Lilliputia someplace. You know, we don't have 35,000 lobbyists marching around the streets of Washington, D.C., ponying up billions of dollars in campaign contributions because they don't expect something in return. Let's grow up and get real, kids. Now, of course, if you're the guy that's on the take, that's good. And if you're the guy that's paying the take and you're getting the vote, that's good. But when you're a Howard Lyman or an Oprah Winfrey and you're expressing freedom of speech, Oprah Winfrey said, well, here's what I think. All of a sudden, she finds out she's getting sued. Now, that's what happens to people that get crosswise of these money interests. They come out with their propaganda. It can be in the form of advertising. Or in the case of this Dr. Brown. Now, see, this Dr. Brown writes an article, and then he submits that to the Coronet or Reader's Digest or Ladies' Home Journal. And somebody sitting on the board of directors says, hey, that's a good article. Let's run that in the paper. And maybe he also sits on the National Dairy Council board of directors. And many of these boards of directors have interlinking board members. And many of them work for banks, or they're on bank boards, or you know, they're on the Cancer Society board, or something like that. They've all got an axe to grind, and they've all got money to be made. Now, when I come on the air, I'm not, you know, grinding any axes. There isn't any lobby out here paying me to tell you about how good raw milk is. There isn't any constituency for raw milk. There's a few people out here like myself that says, well, would you just allow us to make our own choice? And the answer is, hell no, you cannot make your own choice. We've made that choice for you. And that's my objection to the legislative process. I don't want some legislator down in Austin, Texas, or Tallahassee, Florida, or Sacramento, California, telling me that I can't drink raw milk. I mean, these are the same people that tell us that smoking's all right. I don't know how many people die from smoking every year. I think smoking is a bad choice, kids. I used to smoke. I quit. Smoking's bad for people. That's my conclusion. But I don't tell smokers that they shouldn't smoke. I tell them, hell, light up. Just don't light up around me. Don't you blow your smoke over here in my area. But, you know, I think that smokers should have a right to make a bad choice and kill themselves with lung cancer if that's what they want to do. And I think Oprah Winfrey and Howard Lyman should have a right to come on the air or stand up in a public forum and say, I'm not going to eat hamburger because the stuff is dirty and it's bad for me, and I don't think that you ought to eat it either. And then, I'm pretty broad-minded. If the American Dairy Council wants to stand up there and tell you how good pasteurized milk is, they ought to have a right to do that. McDonald's should have a right to stand up there and tell you, here's why you should eat McDonald's hamburgers, because they're really healthy and nutritious and they're really good for you. What I'm opposed to is this one-sided reporting, or this one-sided smear, or this one-sided fear tactic. We'll sue you, we'll prosecute you, and put you in jail if you dare to criticize our McDonald's hamburgers or our pasteurized homogenized milk. That's what I'm opposed to. Both sides should have a right to speak, and the dairy industry should have a right to speak. But the legislature shouldn't get out there and then legislate in favor of the milk industry and tell the rest of us that we have to drink that trash. And remember what's wrong with store-bought milk. First of all, store milk has 3.5% butterfat or less. Real milk has 4% butterfat or more. And the real milk has the hormone that you need, but the enzyme that you need to digest it. And the pasteurized milk contains no enzymes, and you can't digest it. And the lie in pasteurized milk is that milk contains calcium. And they're telling you the truth when they tell you that that milk, that pasteurized, homogenized milk, contains gobs and gobs of calcium. And they're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth. What they're not telling you is that without that enzyme, the enzyme that is destroyed when they pasteurize it, you can't digest it, and you can't assimilate the calcium that's in the milk. So of what value is the milk if you can't use the calcium that's in it? And that's what they don't tell you. And then if you come on the air and you tell somebody that, then they say, well, now you're disparaging milk, you're disparaging meat, and you're in violation of the Texas statute, and we're going to punish you, we're going to prosecute you, we are going to put you in prison for exercising free speech and telling the truth. The American people, boys and girls, do not like free speech. What we like is controlled speech, friendly speech, and speech that we agree with. Now, we're all in favor of that kind of speech, but speech that tells the truth, speech that uncovers unwanted facts. Now, that's the kind of speech that we're opposed to and we don't want to hear. It's controversial, makes us feel bad. Hey, before we go on here with the last portion, let me tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these law hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the law hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling us and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, a little slower, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the law, or an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Keep in mind, though, that these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to endorse and recommend us. Most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I'm going to give you a plug here with William Campbell Douglas again, the guy that wrote The Milk of Human Kindness, medical doctor, hell of a nice guy, very bright, articulate fellow. And he's an iconoclast. He's one of those kind of guys that stands up and says, hey, let me tell you where the beer does it. Let me tell you where the rubber meets the road. And there's another guy over here named Charlie Walters. He's another one of those little crusty guys, you know, and he just kind of tells you, let me tell you where it's at. And he publishes a newsletter here, a paper, for the agricultural people. In fact, it's good for all people, whether you live in the city or you live on the farm. It's called Acres USA. If you want to know where the bodies are buried out here with GMOs and Monsanto and government corruption and so on, Acres is just a whale of a good source. Costs you about $30 a year, comes out once a month, and it's about 100 pages. Let me just take a look here quickly. I say 100 pages, it's a 90 pages, 91 pages. And they got a phone number, and the number is 512-892-4400. That's 512-892-4400. They put out a hell of an article. For $5, you can get this this issue. It's the May 2006 issue, and it's the one that contained this Real Milk article, and written by Sally Fallon. Sally Fallon, nice lady from Washington, D.C., who runs an operation called realmilk.com. So if you didn't get that down, www.realmilk.com will tell you where to buy real milk in your state, even Texas, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, all these states you know that outlaw raw milk. You can get it there. Now, you're going to have to comply with the local law, and there's little ins and outs that you have to comply with, because raw milk in America is about like marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. It's treated that way by your government, which is why it's so popular. You know, when you outlaw something like cigarettes and booze and marijuana, it just becomes real popular and people want it. And that's what's happened here. Now, I told you I was going to tell you about ice cream. Douglas has got a chapter in here on ice cream. See if I can find this ice cream. Ice cream chapter here. I'm just flipping through the book here. Come on, greasy counterfeit. Come on, ice cream. Oh, I can't believe now I can't find it. I thought it was about the last chapter. Am I right? Ice cream. Yeah, here it is. Oh, please pass the grass. Let him eat steak. And gets past that on page 237, and here comes ice cream. You need a scoop of ice cream, he says. Now, if you're an ice cream freak like me, watching the manufacture of ice cream at Altadena Dairy is almost like a religious experience. The temple is the storage area where rich, luscious, creamy, natural, raw cream, gorgeous ice cream is stacked three stories high. Altadena ice cream is the only raw milk ice cream, completely natural ice cream available in the entire United States of America on a commercial basis. Commercial basis. That tells you a lot about the status of our food supply. Now, let me flip over here a page or two, pass the good ice cream over here. Let me tell you a little something here about ice cream. There are over 1,000 different chemicals used in commercial ice cream. Did you get that, boys and girls? Let me read that to you again. There are over 1,000 different chemicals used in commercial ice cream. How about those beautiful colors added to the ice cream to make your little one's birthday a truly memorable event? You will get tartrazine yellow to upset his little stomach, disamine red, 6B for red, and indiotine for blue. It can also be poisoned with amaranth, Poncreo 2R, and titanium dioxide. Coal tar dyes are the major source of artificial coloring. Many of them are known to be potent cancer-causing agents. Let me underline that one for you. Of these 1,000 different chemicals used in your commercial ice cream, coal tar dyes are the major source of artificial coloring, and many of these artificial colors are known to be potent cancer-causing agents. Remember, you heard it first right here. A single ice cream may contain as many as 55 chemical ingredients. Got that? Let me underline that one. A single ice cream may contain as many as 55 chemical ingredients. Yum, yummy. Now, if you really go El Cheapo, you might get refiner's syrup as the nutritive sweetener. Refiner's syrup is the last liquid product of the sugar refining process. It has been described by technicians in the field as practically inedible. These are the people, the technicians in the field. These are the people that make it. They say it is practically inedible. You need a good emulsifier to make ice cream. It gives it a characteristic stiffness and richness. Grandmother, not being wise in economics and knowing nothing about chemicals, used fresh eggs from the hen house. Today they use diethylglycol. Whatever that is, those are artificial eggs. It is an antifreeze. Now, did you get that? Today they use this diethylglycol. It's an antifreeze and polyoxyethylene. God, that tastes good. You have not eaten ice cream until you have gotten ice cream with polyoxyethylene in it, which is suspected of causing cancer. Nonsense. Just because they think it causes cancer doesn't make it true. Now, does it? They also use polysorbate 65. Polysorbate 65. God, this stuff, this sounds better every time I read one of these ingredients. They also use a polysorbate 65. It deceives you into thinking that the ice cream has a high cream content. As a thickener, you may find dioctyl sodium sulfoscocinate. You got to forgive me. I'm just a crummy plumber here, but let me spell it for you. It's called D-I-O-C-T-Y-L. Sodium, S-O-D-I-U-M. Now I can pronounce that one. And here's the biggie. It's a S-U-L-F-O-S-U-C-C-I-N-A-T-E. Kids, if you can't pronounce it, how on earth could this be good for you? I mean, we got stuff in here we have to spill. It is so complex, which is a chemical used in medicine as a stool softener. So when you're, listen, kids, if you're constipated, ice cream is probably what you need because they've got a stool softener in the ice cream. Isn't that just real special? One of the most common additives to ice cream is carrageenan. When the chemical is added to water and fed to guinea pigs, they develop ulcers. Some scientists think it may cause ulcerative colitis in humans. Commercial ice cream is loaded with sugar. Sugar causes diabetes, and according to Dr. Norman Krechner of Stanford University, sugar is a major cause of atherosclerosis. That is, plugging up your arteries. A person with hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, may faint or have a convulsion from eating sugar-laden commercial ice cream. The convulsions may be from the sugar or from the chemicals or from both. And we could tell you about the additive CMC causing tumors and polysorbate 80. Now remember, you got polysorbate 65, and here's polysorbate 80. Does that mean that we have polysorbate 70, polysorbate number 71, polysorbate number 72, polysorbate number 73? I don't know. There's 1,000 of these chemicals that's used in commercial ice cream. 55 of them may be in any one particular brand or flavor. 55 of these chemicals. Now, this polysorbate 80 causes premature death in experimental animals, but I guess you get the message. If you want to go on an Eskimo pie in the sky trip, eat commercial ice cream. Now, here again, boys and girls, I'm not here, you know, blasting the commercial ice cream people over here. I mean, I think they should have a right to sell that product if they so desire, and I think you should have a right to buy it. I just think that it ought to be labeled so that you can see what's in there. Now, many of these products have labels on them, and you know, and if you read the labels that are on these products, and when I get down to those words, you know, that I can't pronounce, and I have to spell, and there's so many syllables that I can't put these terms together. You know, I just kind of look at that and say, you know, if I can't pronounce it, it just can't be good for me. Strawberry, I can pronounce that one, and I think fresh strawberries might be pretty good. Peaches and pears and cherries and things like that. I can see some merit in that. But polysorbate 80? What was this one over here? Polyoxythylene? Polyoxythylene. Hey, I'm just kind of skipping over, you know, from paragraph to paragraph. I can't read you the whole book here, kids, but I just wanted to suggest to you that you get a copy for yourself. It's humorous. I mean, this guy should have been in vaudeville. He should be in comedy. He should be out there with Eddie Murphy doing some stand-up routines. The guy's name is William Campbell Douglas. The book is called The Milk of Human Kindness. We're talking about, here's what's in your ice cream. And a fellow by the name of Lyman, my guy's name here, yeah, Lyman, Howard F. Lyman, he had the audacity to come on the Oprah Winfrey show and tell people what was in their hamburger. Oprah Winfrey was just absolutely shocked. Shocked. And she said, well, I'm not going to eat a hamburger again. And so the Texas legislature, in their infinite wisdom, deciding that libelous. I think it was libel they sued her for. It was libeling the meat industry and the cattlemen of Texas. Hey, let me tell you a little something about cattlemen while we're at it. I'm a cattleman. Cattleman. The cattleman or the cattlewoman is somebody that breeds cattle, not personally, but you know, by bulls. They breed cattle and they raise calves and then they sell livestock. And like as not, you know, they produce a pretty good product. You know, the cow eats grass and she produces milk and the calf sucks the cow and the calf gets the milk and the calf gets bigger and bigger. And when that calf gets to be about 400 or 500 pounds, they sell him off as a wiener calf and he goes over to a feedlot. Now that's where the problem begins. And this guy, Howard F. Lyman, wrote a book by the name of Mad Cowboy, and he explains to you from his point of view as a feedlot owner, the guy that buys the calf from the cattleman who produced a clean, pure product and then gave it to the stockyard, gave it to the feedlot owner who then fed that calf with all these chemicals, dyes and sprays and et cetera, and turned that thing into a cancer-producing machine. And then they sell it to you down here at Steak and Ale. Steak and Ale. Talking about ice cream, now, if you like chocolate ice cream, then please raise your hand. The best way to disguise the poor quality of reworked ice cream is to add a lot of chocolate. There's not much good news about chocolate, and there's a lot of bad news about chocolate. So if you don't want to be turned off on chocolate, then skip to page 250. Now, this is page 246. So if you don't want to be turned off on ice cream, then you need to skip these next four pages. The following information on chocolate comes from the newsletter of Tom Cooper, MD, of Atlanta, Georgia. As I can't improve upon it, I'm just going to repeat it in total right here. It says, almost everyone with a weight problem has a chocolate problem. Since I have a hard time resisting chocolate, I decided to see if there was anything about it that would turn me off. So I struck pay dirt in the first reference book that I consulted in the Food and Drug Administration Policy Guideline reference publication. It seems that candy bars don't grow on trees after all. Over half the chocolate that we consume comes from cocoa trees found in West Africa in countries like Ghana, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and Cameroon. The cocoa tree grows in a lush tropical environment, and it has a number of fungi and insects that are enemies to this plant. Therefore, it's necessary to spray the trees with a number of control chemicals, including organic and potentially toxic fungicides that could remain in small amounts in the harvested cocoa beans. The cocoa trees produce a certain number of seed pods each year. These pods are harvested and the cocoa beans are removed manually by natives. They're then spread out on the jungle floor and allowed to ferment, which is a nice way to say rot, for 5 to 6 days in the jungle heat and humidity. And there's nothing to keep insects and small animals from nesting and feeding among the beans while they're exposed to the elements. It is common to find animal droppings, dead insects, and animal hairs in this fermenting collection of cocoa beans. After they have stayed like this for the required period of time, they're then stacked in jute, or packed rather in jute or plastic bags, and then stored in harbor warehouses until it's time to load them into the holds of ships for transportation to this country. In those warehouses and the ship holds, they're again subjected to the ravages of resident rodents, rats, mice, and insects. The cocoa bean is a rich source of fats and carbohydrates and is relished by both kinds of pests. The resulting mixture of cocoa beans, insect fragments, rodent droppings, leaves, and rat hairs is then unloaded in this country and is taken to one or another of the various chocolate processing factories. A conscientious effort is made by these companies to remove as many of these contaminants as they possibly can. But the thousands of tons of raw material processed each month make this a virtual impossibility. To quote the FDA manual, the action levels are set because it is not now possible and never has been possible to grow in open fields, harvest, and process crops that are totally free of natural defects. So when you translate natural defects into hairs, insect fragments, and animal waste, there is, and I know you will be comforted to know this, a level at which the FDA will seize a product and not let it be sold. But if 100 grams, about 3 ounces of chocolate, exceeds an average of 60 microscopic insect fragments or one rodent hair, when 6 similar samples are analyzed, or if any one sample contains more than 90 insect fragments or 3 rodent hairs, then this sample will be rejected by the FDA. And they tell us that raw milk is bad for us? Oh my God, give me a break, would you? Hey, I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So till then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.